Happy Earth Day! On today's episode, we are celebrating Earth Day with none other than National Geographic explorer Gabriel Gobardino, who lives right here in Washington, D.C. Ecologist Gabriel has received funding from the National Geographic Society for her important work studying plankton in the Anacostia River, including phytoplankton that produce more than 50% of our oxygen in our atmosphere. So, the next time you take a deep breath, thank plankton. Gabrielle is also a former 5th grade science teacher and joined one of Nat Geo's recent virtual field trips and showed DC kids how to capture and study plankton in their own backyards using just a mason jar and coffee filter. So let's get into our Earth Day conversation with Gabrielle Gobardino. Welcome back to the District Channel. It's your girl, Yenny.
Hey, everyone. It's your boy, Arvin.
And today we have a very special episode for Earth Day. And today we have National Geographic explorer Gabriel Gobardino. Gabriel, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited to dive into, what you're doing, pun intended, to everything you're doing and your important work. So before we start into all that and just talking about what you do, tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Sure. So I'm originally from Connecticut. And I hold a PhD in biological oceanography from North Carolina State University, and I study plankton. Plankton are some of the more overlooked members of our marine ecosystem. And so as a National Geographic explorer, I just try to bring light to them and explore a lot of research questions related to them through photography and through basic research. And in addition to my research, I'm also an educator. Really dedicated to education and both formally and informally.
I love it. You do everything. So, I mean, what made you want to become an explorer?
Well, being an explorer, it's always kind of been a dream of mine. It's always been a goal. I met a National Geographic explorer, Dr. Sylvia Earle, when I was in, when I was in elementary school, I think about fifth grade, and I met her and I heard a lot about her research at a book signing, and I was there with my mom, and that pretty much was it for me. I saw her and I met her and I was like, yep, this is exactly what I want to do. I want to be a marine scientist. I want to be a National Geographic explorer. So it's kind of been a long time coming, a long-term goal of mine.
Yeah, that marine dive, that diving into the sea, that stuff. I have a phobia of sharks.
Really?
Yeah. And but I have a phobia of big bodies of water.
Okay.
That's like my thing. And that's, to me, that's brave. It's brave going down there. Because you have to go really, really deep, don't you?
It depends. Sometimes, you know, we'll only go about 20 feet and it'll be fine for the research. But sometimes we do end up going quite a bit deeper. But it can be a little intimidating, especially when you can't see, you know, more than like a foot in front of you because of turbidity or, you know, the water's not clear. Yeah, I understand that. It can be a little.
I mean, and how, you know, with like, you know, the whole pandemic and everything, I mean, did that affect your work at all? I mean, obviously, you know, we had to be shut down and quarantined and everything. I mean, but did that affect your work at all?
It did a little bit. A lot of the ships like completely closed. So as far as like getting on a ship or a boat and going to collect samples, that was really put on hold for last year. It's starting to come back up a little bit more now for the summer especially, but everything was kind of on hold. We were, you know, I was locked down just as everybody else. And so it required me to look at local water systems a lot more than I normally would have, I think. So whether it be work in DC, I also do sampling up in New York as well. So just using the resources that we have in our backyard. And that's kind of been the theme of this past year of using what's around, doesn't require airplane travel, things like that.
Yeah, I saw that you did a recent experiment, you know, a virtual field trip. And you show DC kids how to capture and study plankton in their own backyards using a mason jar and coffee filter. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite things to do because, I mean, I grew up by the water, but I never knew what plankton were or even that I could use household materials to look for them. So it was just something that I thought of because, you know, I feel like everybody has a coffee filter or everybody has, you know, a bag that they use for tea that they can use in this way too. And so it's a really approachable way to go and use something that we all have to go and look at the plankton that maybe, you know, right down the road that we've never even, you know, considered, right? Plankton are the base of the food web. And so, so much of life depends on it, whether you're in a river or a pond or the ocean. So utilizing this really simple way to approach, you know, plankton and plankton science, I thought was like a fun thing for students to do.
Awesome. So this pandemic, is that what led you to do a little bit more research on the Anacostia?
Yeah, it's exactly what it was. I had moved to DC for a marine policy fellowship, and I, you know, started to explore my backyard, you know, just being having moved to the area and never been here before. And so I started just scoping out easily accessible areas. That was the biggest thing. What can I get to by foot? What can I get to that, you know, is safe for one person to go in with a small net or water bottle and collect samples from? So that was, you know, that's how we ended up in the Anacostia.
I'm laughing because I've never heard somebody say that it's safe going to the Anacostia. Which leads me to my next question. What did you think of what you found in the Anacostia?
So I really enjoyed it. It was the day that we went out, the particular video that you're referring to was a beautiful day. And I was just excited to be out. It was very funny because of the turbidity in the mud in the river, everything's very slippery. And so when I went in, I had a little microphone attached to me and the National Geographic team was like, just don't get wet. That's the only thing, you know, you have waders on, just don't get wet. I think I lasted about 15 seconds before I fell in. And so I was like, great, this is a good start to the field day. Soaked, everything was wet. I was like, this is great.
Oh man, yeah. Yeah, not too many people around here are fond of the Anacostia. I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, I mean, a great plankton, you know, plankton are everywhere. So all I needed was, you know, effectively, this is what I sample with. So a bottle about the size of my hand and just dip it right in with a net and just collect. It was great because really cool thing about that waterway is that there's a lot of, obviously, human activity. And so getting, you know, being able to see that and compare that sample, you know, compared to my other samples, which are in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico or the Atlantic Ocean, where there's obviously less of that human influence. It was great to compare.
Awesome.
I love it. And I, you know, I was just learning the fact is that phytoplankton produces more than 50% of our oxygen. And I didn't know that. I mean, when you said that, you know, you didn't know much about plankton, I didn't either. The only plankton I know was from SpongeBob.
Yep.
You know, I didn't want to say that, but yeah, true.
No, I know. But
I'm glad you brought it up first.
I'm being real. You know, I'm being real. I didn't know much. I mean, I really didn't. I mean, I knew, you know, that they were the base in the ecosystem. I knew that. But other than that, you know, I really didn't study them. And I thought it was very interesting because I'm just like, when we start to educate and learn and you learn about these things, we start to appreciate it more. We're like, wow, like we need that. We need to take care of this. And that goes into like how, like, you know, with the Earth Day theme, how would you define Earth Day and the importance of, you know, what plankton is and their fundamental, you know, what is their fundamental in this Earth Day?
So my old advisor used to say, if you can read, thank a teacher. And if you can breathe, thank a plankton. And I feel like that is just like the theme of just Earth Day and every day, because it's truly, you know, plankton produce, as you said, more than 50% of the oxygen that we breathe. They're the base of the marine, you know, food system and our fisheries. So pretty much all of the fish that we eat depend on plankton. And, you know, we depend on plankton for so many other, you know, really obscure reasons that we don't even fully understand or know about. And so to me, you know, Earth Day and understanding, you know, Earth Day is very much like the celebration and the protection of the Earth. And it's a global celebration. It started in the 70s. You know, it's April 22nd every year. And so for me, Earth Day is, you know, about protecting what we have and appreciating what's around us through nature. And plankton's part of that. Plankton's a huge part of that. So just being aware of, you know, what's around you, in the pond of water or the stream next to you, there's a whole ecosystem, even if you can't see it, right?
Yes. Yeah. They made plankton look so bad in SpongeBob.
Very evil, yes.
Very evil. Always trying to steal a carrot patty, right?
No. But
not a good look.
So your work was funded by the National Geographic Society. Tell us a little bit more how you, I mean, how did you just become this National Geographic Explorer? I mean, you talked a little bit about, you know, you being a former science teacher and then going into this work. I mean, how did you get to that step?
So Nat Geo funded a project of mine, and through that, I became an explorer. And being an explorer is really special, right? It's the whole National Geographic group is so close-knit, and it's so supportive, and it's very much like a family. And so that network of Nat Geo has really allowed me to use my platform to continuously work on plankton science and promote it through social media, through photography, and through engaging with the public through science communication. And so it started with a grant that was, you know, very small on one research project, and they have just continuously supported me throughout my career. The grant, I believe, was in 2017. And so as you can see now, we're still going, the relationship is still strong, thriving, and it's really, really allowed me to continue my work. And so it's a great organization, and you know, I'm forever thankful for the platform that they've allowed for me to promote plankton.
Yeah, how cool you get to just show off with the kids. I mean, just doing fun experiments. I when I was, you know, in science class, I really appreciated the experiments, being hands-on, and that's how I would learn. So I love that.
Me too. Absolutely. It's a big thing, right? Having those, you know, in new experiments, not just the same things over and over again, but having like interesting people go and talk the jobs you've never heard of or experiments you've never even, you know, knew you could do. So that's the cool thing about Nat Geo, is a lot of the stuff is very innovative.
Love it. And, yeah. and for someone who doesn't really know what plankton is or you know, what, you know, the fundamentals of a plankton, can you kind of give a brief description of it?
Sure. A plankton is a lifestyle. So if you're an organism that cannot swim against the current, whether you're a small bacteria cell or a phytoplankton or a larval fish or a larval lobster or clam, all the way up to a jellyfish, you're a plankton. Plankton just means you cannot swim against the current, and that can be situational. So it can be, you know, when an organism is really small in its life stage, or it can just be a full grown jellyfish and they just aren't able to swim up against, you know, the currents in our waters. So plankton is an umbrella term. It includes so many different types of organisms, but they are the base of the food web, and so many things depend on them. So if you think about the grasses in our parks or in our forests that, you know, everything eats and depends on, all those shrubs and trees and grasses, same for plankton.
Yeah, I was going through your Instagram page, March of Plankton.
March of the Plankton. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going through your Instagram page and I see that there's different kinds.
Mm-hmm.
And they look so cool up close.
Yeah, that's the photography. That's that, you know, I use a microscope and there's a few different types depending on the plankton I'm looking at or the sample. And that's what I use to try to engage people, because not everybody has access to a microscope, right? But everyone has some type of social media, you know, so it's a cool way to introduce people to the true diversity.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm looking at a zooplankton Naplius.
Naplia. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to say, that's what I appreciate about Nat Geo. Nat Geo does a great job of, you know, using the visuals to educate others and being able to do that, right? To educate them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, we have some questions from our listeners.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Here we go.
Arvin, I don't know if you want to ask one and then I'll go.
Well, you go ahead and ask the first one since you brought it up. All right. You're going to make our guests feel uncomfortable.
No, Gabriel is fine. Gabriel, so one of our listeners asked, what are some easy ways we can help our environment?
That's a great question. I would say that there are a lot of things we can do as either individuals or even as small groups or families. And probably something that I recommend everyone do is we all go for walks. We all go for walks in the park or in the beach or on the sidewalk. And if you just bring trash bag and just collect stuff on your daily walk, you are helping. And it's a small thing that, you know, we can all do. A 3-year-old can do it, a 30-year-old can do it, and, you know, everyone can just take care of their local community that way. And so I love that. I also think that cutting back on our own waste and composting is a really great thing to do. I live in an apartment. And so that's something that I try to do even in this very small space that I currently am in. And then probably, you know, during the pandemic, I really turned to gardening, even though I'm in this very small apartment. And so for those that have the ability to either plant outside or maybe on a terrace or something like that, I really recommend native plants. And just, you know, helping the pollinators, the bee population, any way that we can, because it's all connected, right? The things that we're doing on our streets and our sidewalks are impacting the plankton in our ocean through runoff or microplastics. And so just taking care of, if we just all took care of our little circle, we would all be helping and benefiting each other and Earth as a, you know, as a side effect of that.
I love that you mentioned, because planting native plants do help with pollinators. And I think people don't see the importance of that, but it helps, you know, attract the bees and the cute little birds, you know, that, you know, it just makes it all work in the ecosystem. I just want to add to it before you ask the other question, Arvin, what are ways we can preserve, you know, plankton in being the fun, you know, the base of our ecosystem? Are there any ways, or if I'm making sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that we all are really familiar when plankton are harmful. We're all really familiar with red tide or brown tide, or when our ponds or maybe our pools turn green. So we all know when plankton can become a nuisance or become harmful in an area. And one thing that we can all do to avoid that is just avoid a lot of nutrients going into our water. So if we're using a lot of fertilizer on our lawns, or if we're not, you know, just being mindful of the things that we're putting down our drains, it can cause that impact will show up in the waterway. So that's the easiest way, is just being mindful of things we're putting, you know, in our grasses, in our lawns, that we're disposing of down the drain. So that way it won't impact the plankton population and cause a potentially harmful bloom.
Wow. So when the water, there's a pond I go by that's like close by here. And I've noticed the water was very green and it kind of looked, you know, algae-ish. Does that make sense? Like there was like that green stuff on it. I don't know. And I it didn't look good. So what is that? Why does that form?
A lot of times it's natural and it's seasonal. And so you'll see it, we'll see it everywhere right now, especially as the water gets a little bit warmer and the sun's out. And so the plankton are really happy right now. It's getting that springtime bloom. So that's natural. But the things that happen that are unnatural are a lot of times when we have a huge bloom because we have like a local, we have like a nutrient spill, or there was, you know, runoff with like sewage or something like that that's getting into the waterway from a flood or from someone that dumped it when they shouldn't have, and that causes the blooms to form. So a lot of the times you'll see a spike in the spring, you'll see that natural bloom color. That's all that plankton dividing and they're happy. This one is this is a colored one. You can see how it's like green and brown. This is a local sample I got maybe last week. And so the plankton in here are really happy and they're just loving the direct sunlight, and they're safe and not being eaten. And so that water will naturally turn green. But things that we do, you know, especially in the summer, to try to just be mindful, I always stress the fertilizers because that's probably one of the biggest things that come from like our yards or things like that.
See, that's good to know, because when I saw it, I was here thinking, man, that pond doesn't look good. I mean, that, you know, something must have gotten there. But you, like you mentioned, if it's green, it's actually healthy for the plankton.
Yep, it's usually okay, especially in the springtime. It's because it naturally will peak. And then as the phytoplankton go up, the zooplankton or the predators will begin to eat them down. So you'll see the color change a little bit as the season progresses. I see.
It's like it looks good to us when it's clear.
Of course. But, of course.
Yeah. But so, okay. So so this next question is, what is the longest they stayed out of the sea? I guess what they're trying to ask is, how long can they survive out of water?
That's an interesting question. I think it depends on the plankton. Some plankton will die as soon as they dry out. So you can have them, and then as soon as the cup or the petri dish or whatever they're in dries out, they're dead. There are a ton of different plankton, though, that will be able, that can actually survive. And for example, and this is the true diversity of plankton. Everyone knows what a lobster is. Everyone knows what an oyster is. We've all seen them out of water. Well, those are a marrow plankton, because when they're in their larval stage, they are plankton. They can't swim against the current. And so you could actually put your water bottle into the you know, middle of the water and grab that larval clam or oyster. So it really does depend what type of plankton you're talking about. Some of them grow up to be just fine out of water.
That's interesting. And yeah. I think the question can also mean, like, what's the longest you stayed out of sea?
Oh, the longest on a ship, I think, was about 36 days, if I'm remembering correctly. Wow. So 36 days.
How 36 was that? Days?
Mm-hmm.
No wonder you were seasick. I saw your Instagram. Sorry, I'm stalking you. I'm stalking you.
Oh, no, you're fine. Yeah, I'm a marine biologist and I get terribly seasick. I thought that was going to disqualify me, but I just.
It's what going. You love to do.
Yeah.
It's what you love to do, so you're willing to go through it.
Yep.
It's just, there's just so much we don't know about the ocean, you know? I think it's scary to me sometimes because I think I was seeing a documentary where, like, just to go beyond, like, no one has ever gone beyond, like, what they call, do you know the term? It's like when it turns black, like, no one knows what's under there.
Oh, the abyssal plain? Is that what you mean? Like, the deepest parts?
Yeah. Yeah,
where that scary fish is at, you know, the one with all the lights and all that stuff.
Yeah,
I'm good. Yeah. They don't have to find anymore.
It's scary that not to know, you know, that we don't know as much as we think of the ocean. But I appreciate, you know, people like you, Gabrielle, that take the time to learn about what's going on there and to learn about plankton, which is, again, the most important in our ecosystem, you know. So
absolutely.
You know, talking about documentaries, we had a couple people ask this question. They said, what is your take on the Seaspiracy Netflix documentary?
If you've seen it.
Yes. So I did see it. I actually watched it last week. I, you know, I have a lot of thoughts about the documentary.
It's so controversial.
It's very controversial. And, it, you know, you can even just when you scroll through Instagram, there are so many posts that address it and everyone's different take. So I think that, you know, it hits on some really important points. Is it perfect? No, I don't think that it is. I think that it could have done. I think the biggest thing I wish that it had done was highlight the great things that are happening. You know, I know it's a documentary. I know it had a job to do like an expose of quite a few topics. But I do wish that it had highlighted some of the really successful aquaculture work that's being done in the United States and some of the positives. I find that, you know, my parents are not scientists at all. And they, when I talk to them about recycling and issues as far as like plastic use and food consumption, as far as seafood and all these things, they almost get fatigued because I throw so many things at them and it's like, it's overwhelming and they just can sometimes shut down. And so that's kind of how I felt with the documentary. When there's so much negativity, you know, your audience is left with like, oh God, now what? Like, what now? What do I do? So I just wish that they had really incorporated some of the more hopeful and positive messages, especially around, as I said, aquaculture. I think that would have left a better taste in people's mouths.
That's very interesting.
Okay, I gotta watch it now.
And I think, you know, I was also seeing a lot of posts where even from like the clothes we wear, like to the straws, like all those things is taken into account, like the things of how we can even help our planet, you know, and just like mm-hmm. you said, but also getting bombarded with all this information and you know, how we're hurting it and how it can be overwhelming. I mean, you know, we're trying, you know, it's hard when
of course.
We have a whole generation of people who like, of course, I mean, the whole Earth Day, like you said, it started in the 70s. And, you know, back then, I mean, no one was really talking about, you know, recycling and doing all this stuff. I mean, I'm sure people have done it, but, like, you know, to see how it's been impacted and how it's grown over the years, I mean, again, like, it just, it takes on and it could become overwhelming.
Yeah. And especially with social media, yeah. Everyone now has a platform. Everyone now has a voice, and rightfully so, in a lot of cases where there are just so many things that are being exposed and brought to light. And as a consumer, it's like, well, you only have so much energy and so many points. Like, is today the day that I put all my points into caring about the ocean? Is today the day that I put all my points into caring about, you know, women's rights or, you know, whatever? And so it's like, there's just so many things vying for your attention. So that would be my one thing, is maybe for the documentary or any documentaries, maybe end it on a, like, a happy note, or like something for people to hold on to, you know?
No, but
it's like everything is just,
yeah.
It's like, I want to deliver this message and I want to just slam it into you.
Yep.
No, but it goes back to what you were saying, Gabrielle. You were saying just by you taking a walk, picking up, you know, trash on the floor or something, I mean, that makes a big impact. And like you said, like, we can't do everything at once. I mean, you know, you can try, but it can be so much. It can be burdening. So, I mean, I'm going to put you in the spot here a little bit, Gabrielle.
Okay.
Nat Geo had asked you to do a documentary. I mean, it could be on plankton, whatever it is. I mean, what would it be on, and how would you produce it, let's say?
Oh my gosh. Unlimited. Are these unlimited funds? Are these, you know?
Good question. No, I'm pretty sure. I don't think there's unlimited funds, but I'm pretty sure there's a limit.
I'm giving you no limit, because it's pretend, you know what I'm saying?
Gosh, if I had my dream project that's realistic to what I can do, yeah. I would go work around the world, and I would hit up local scientists from all the different coastlines and sample their plankton with them and be like, take me to the spot. Because there are plankton scientists, and every coastline has a plankton scientist, right? In every country, there's someone that's looking at what's in the water, because plankton can be harmful. So there's someone sampling. And so I would go to all these different countries, and I would, you know, interact with the community and take their samples, and then take photographs with them, and as far as like what's in their water, and just photograph the plankton and bring that, and really showcase it around the world. Because what is in our water in, you know, the Anacostia is not what's in the Hudson River. It's not what's in Mauritius. It's not what's in Japan. And so the diversity is incredible. And I think it'd be a really, oh God, the dream project. It would be a really cool project.
Yes. Not only are you traveling, but you're getting to meet all these people, and you're getting to see all these oceans. And I think you bring a good point, because when we compare, like, let's say in Arvin, don't laugh, but like Ocean City versus like, let's say a beach in Puerto Rico. I mean, I've been to with Icacos, and just to see like how clear that water is compared to like Ocean City, I'm just like mesmerized, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, we don't know. You mentioned us really not knowing much about the deep sea or knowing much about our ocean, and it's to the plankton as well, right? We don't know, you know, half of the plankton that's out there, as far as there are species and genera that are being discovered, you know, every year of these organisms. So it's pretty impressive, and there's a lot left. There's so much there. You want exploration? Go to the ocean.
Yes. And what are some good resources people can? Arvin, give me that face. He's like, I don't know if I want to go to the ocean right now.
I was nodding. I was nodding for a good minute until she said, "Go to the ocean."
Yeah, do it.
Be bold, okay? Be bold. But no, what are some resources for people out there, whether they want to learn more about plankton or learn more about, you know, what's in the ocean and how we can help? What are some good resources that you can offer to them?
Yeah, so I, you know, the best one that comes to mind, as far as if you're interested in looking at ocean research, is going to the nationalgeographic.com. They have a great ocean section, and that will highlight a lot of the work that they are active in all over the world, truly all over. And then, you know, if you're interested in learning more about plankton work that I do, or they're looking at the photography, by all means, you know, head to March of the Plankton. On Instagram. I only have one social media, and that's the only one. So, but if you have any plankton questions, and you know, anybody wants to contact me on that, by all means, send me your plankton pictures. I'll try to help identify them with you.
I love that. Okay, so what are some social media links that you can offer? I know you mentioned Instagram, but anything else where people can reach out to you?
Honestly, that's it. I was kind of a hermit on social media, so I only have one, but I do check it all the time. So if anybody, you know, messages me, I'm usually on it probably once a day. So
love that. So we'll definitely have that information on the description. So again, so the next time, guys, that you take a deep breath, thank plankton, okay? We got to thank Jan Gabrielle for doing such important work that we need in order to learn more about the effects and the impacts plankton has on our environment. I mean, on everything and what we breathe. Gabrielle, thank you so much. It was such a pleasure to have you on the show. But before we go, are there any encouraging words you can offer to anyone out there?
You know, I'm just going to say go explore. Get out there, you know, be safe about it. But go explore. You know, we're all explorers from a very young age. Go be curious. Go to your local river or pond, overturn a rock, you know, take a look at what's there. Plankton are tiny, you know, but they're all there. There's a whole ecosystem just at your fingertips, and there's a whole community. So just take a second and just explore what's around you.
I love that. Because we're always
when I go to work tonight.
Yeah.
Over a rock at the Anacostia.
We have.
There you go.
I'll do a river. I'll start with a river.
The river. I mean, you're working on the Anacostia River, so.
Yeah, that's what I'm
there
saying.
You go.
I'll go tonight. I'll go tonight. Be like, I'm here.
What am I looking for? I don't know what I'm seeing here.
Okay, I'm gonna go back. I'm gonna go back to the bridge. I love it. No, seriously, Gabrielle, thank you so much again. We appreciate, you know, you and all your hard work, and I'm sure to everyone else who's been involved. Thank you to National Geographic for, you know, for also funding your work and for being able to, you know, introduce us to you. We really appreciate it. And we hope that you out there who's listening to be able to have learned such important information and any facts that you probably didn't know. And make sure to reach out to Gabrielle if you have any other questions on plankton or anything else related to plankton in the ocean. Again, we thank you so much. And, you know, it was a pleasure to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you both so much. And happy Earth Day.
Yes, happy Earth Day,
happy
everyone.
Earth Day.
But yes, make sure, as Gabrielle mentioned, you know, to go out there. And if you see trash or anything, pick it up. Or if there's any other ways that you can help our Earth and protect our Earth and anything else, please make sure to do that and to share with others and encourage others to do the same as well. We want to preserve our beautiful planet and take care of it, because that's what we were here for.
Exactly.
That's right. So, and if you're walking by the Anacostia, sorry, Yanni, if you're walking by the Anacostia, anybody, listen up and listen well. I'm going to hand you a bag because I'm there all the time. And you better
there
pick
you
up
go. I love it.
I love it. Or take a bottle or something. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much. Again, my name is Yenny.
My name is Arvin.
And we are your Ticket to the District.